Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel Chronology episode, and today we're going to be continuing with the Thanos reading order. We are up to Avengers issue 125. It is written by Steve Englehart. We have John Buscema and Dave Cockrum listed as artists, Tom Orzechowski on letters, and P. Goldberg handling the colors. So it's kind of interesting how this issue starts out, even though this Thanos story has been playing out in Captain Marvel over the last 6 or 7 months, and we've seen the Avengers there. None of what's been happening in the Captain Marvel books has been shown in the Avengers thus far. So when we actually open the book, we see that apparently the Avengers have just finished a fight against the Zodiac crew. And we see that Libra is being led away in handcuffs, and apparently Mantis has had some sort of special connection to them. And then we see Cap drive up on his motorcycle. And right now at this period in time, it's actually Captain America and Falcon is the series that's going on. And this was around the time of issue 175, which was the Secret Empire storyline, where Cap was accused of being a traitor. And as he pulls up, the other Avengers are greeting him, but Cap looks pretty forlorn. And Iron Man's saying, hey, we were watching on TV when you cleaned up the Secret Empire. You vindicated yourself. Well done. And Vision is saying, well, Cap's mood hardly seems like he won. And Cap says, well, you know, the television didn't show the whole story, and I can't explain earlier. All I can say is I'm going to have to rethink my entire life. And we know that Secret Empire story eventually led to Cap giving up the title and the costume for a little while. It became Nomad, a man without a country, as it were. Not the first time Cap has chosen not to follow governmental orders. Not the last time either. So pretty interesting and kind of appropriate right now with the political climate we're in. People, it's really strange. People actually fighting over Captain America. People on the right, the conservative movement, saying Cap would support them. People on the left saying, well, no, Cap would support us. You know, he's all about freedom of the individual, not this fascist state that the right supposedly is creating. So kind of interesting when you think about it. I tend to think Cap would lean more toward the left, only because the kind of things that a lot of the conservatives are talking about, I kind of liken them to what we saw in the first Civil War, right, with the superhero or superhuman registration act, superpowers registration act, where everybody had to register powers and government had a lot of control. And so I kind of think Cap would be more on the side of the resistance. So interesting, you know, when you think about Captain America, so many people think of him as kind of an agent of the government, but he's really above that. You know, he really stands for the flag itself, the ideals of freedom in this country. But again, things are so muddy that you have people on the right saying, well, I should have the freedom not to wear a mask and things like that. So really strange where we are right now as in relation to Captain America. It'd probably be an interesting topic for a podcast all on its own. Is Cap, you know, would he be on the left? Would he be on the right? I mean, really, I think ideally he would appeal to both and maybe be somebody who could sort of unify things, one would hope. But anyway, getting back to the story here, Vision says, well, you know, rethinking your whole life, that's not a negative task. It's not for a wise man, Cap, which, you know, Vision is clearly indicating that Captain America is. Meanwhile, Mantis says, I need to go visit the swordsman in the hospital. Apparently, according to the little blurb box here from Roy Thomas, the swordsman was tortured in Avengers 123. So once they're inside Avengers headquarters, Cap saying, hey, Iron Man, T'Challa, why don't you tell me what's been going on here to get my mind off what's happened? And so Iron Man starts to recount some of the things that have happened in the Avengers' recent past. Said, it looks like we were wrong about Mantis maybe, and the swordsman maybe being crooks. You know, we just battled some head-on feature creature called a Starstalker recently, and if it would have been for her, I'm not sure that we would have won. She was able to keep the beast from finishing us off, and she was the one that figured out that Vision solar beams could destroy it. So it seems like Mantis is she's kind of winning the trust of the Avengers. So while they're catching up on that kind of thing, somebody rings the front door buzzer, and we see it's actually Rick Jones's girlfriend, Leanne, who, again, when we saw her show up at Avengers Mansion, that was many, many issues ago in Captain Marvel. So we know we're behind. The Avengers title and the Captain Marvel title haven't been synced up to this point. So as Cap and Vision open the door, Leanne collapses saying, "I'm Luann," and Thanos. And Captain America's like, "Thanos, who or what is that? Answer me." And we're told there is no answer for now. But when we turn the page, we get this big montage, which basically in the space of one page, we sync back up with what's been happening in the Captain Marvel title and the Avengers title. So as I said, we get this montage page, kind of a collage of art here from Buscema and Cockrum. And it explains that all regular readers of Captain Marvel will already know about all this stuff. Thanos is a Power Man ruler of Titan, and he schemes to rule the galaxy. The conflict involved the Avengers at one point. Captain Marvel was pursuing his cosmic war. And then there was the ally of Drax the Destroyer who came, and the Avengers mistakenly attacked him. And then Captain Marvel showed up and straightened everything out. And once everything had been straightened out, they barely had time to kind of catch their breath before Drax, Iron Man, Mar-Vell, and Moondragon were kidnapped and taken to Titan. And that's kind of the last the Avengers have known about what's going on. So as we turn the page, two more days have passed. Swordsman has returned. He is no longer in the hospital. And Black Panther is saying that they've been using their joint Russian-American Space Observatory Star Corps to try to search for their friends and see where they might be. And they haven't been spotted, but what they have found is a massive space fleet sent by Thanos to conquer Earth. So this is the same fleet that we saw Thanos bragging about a couple of issues ago in Captain Marvel, that Thanos was sending full of marauders and criminals to take over the Earth. So the Avengers pile into their couple of spacecraft. One is apparently a Zodiac. You know, I mentioned at the beginning, first page there, we saw Libra of the Zodiac. So apparently the Avengers captured a Zodiac Star Cruiser just recently. And so Black Panther is piloting that. And in the second, it's a Quinjet, so Avengers jet. And all the rest of the Avengers in there, we see Thor, Mantis, Scarlet Witch, Swordsman, Vision, and Cap. And they're all heading out to space. And as soon as they get out there, outside of the atmosphere, they see this massive fleet of vessels. And the attack is engaged, as it were. So Thor, who can survive the rigors of space, he leaves and he climbs on top of the Quinjet and starts throwing his hammer around and flying around, shooting, they look kind of like laser beams, some kind of force bolts from his hammer. I thought Mjolnir could only summon lightning or kind of fire lightning. Clearly there would be no lightning in space, but whatever, magic, Thor's hammer. So he's doing okay. Meanwhile, Black Panther in the Zodiac captured ship is using the weapons on that ship to fire as well. On the flagship of Thanos's fleet here, there's a couple of different looking aliens saying, the Terrans are resisting us convincingly, contact Thanos, we must speak. And Thanos shows his face there on the screen, and we know he's become one with the galaxy, so it's that kind of star infused face of his that, where it's just kind of a shadow with the background of a star field. And he doesn't really want to be bothered. He's asking, what is it? I'm engaged. And the leader of his fleet here is saying, suns and stars, his face, he has achieved the godhood he has schemed for. So while thinking that, he's telling Thanos, you know, you promised us that we would strike Earth unopposed, but there are defensive units that are destroying us. We need your help. And why wouldn't he expect Thanos' help? Thanos has the power of a god, right? So can't he just snap his fingers and destroy the Avengers, kill them, blow up their ships, whatever? But Thanos is going to Thanos, you know? He's going to find a way to defeat himself or be full of ego or whatever. Clearly, he's got some kind of scheme going on. And he said, did I not also promise you that each of your ships has enough power to ravage a world? You panic needlessly, scum. Strive on! So, but again, you just got to wonder, like, well, why? I mean, it's your fleet. You want them to win. Why wouldn't you help them out? But whatever. Thanos, like I said, Thanos is going to Thanos, and apparently has his reasons. So meanwhile, Thor actually breaks into the command ship. And now that I guess apparently there's atmosphere, I don't know. We see the bulkhead be destroyed with a big boom. And somebody says, what? The ship's sides. And then we see Thor not yet through the side of the ship, but his background is not a starfield. So apparently he's somewhere in where there's oxygen because he's actually talking. I don't know. It's not, it's probably not done the best. This issue's not done the best in terms of attention to detail. Because we saw earlier too, when Thor was out in space, he was talking. So you just kind of wonder, like, okay, well, there's no air in space. How could he talk? Anyway, he starts attacking all the individual crewmen who are rushing forward to try to destroy him. Meanwhile, outside, the battle rages on, and the Avengers Quinjet and the Zodiac ship that Black Panther are flying seem to be kind of holding their own, but they are worried because they are so vastly outnumbered. And another thing that's interesting, so they at one point, the Quinjet or Black Panther, it's not clear who, they shoot at one of the Space Raider ships, and it's destroyed. But even though it's outside the Earth's atmosphere, it plummets to Earth very, very quickly, within a matter of seconds. And it doesn't burn up in the atmosphere, even though it appears to fall straight down. And then it bounces off a building and is heading towards some people. But we never find out what happens to those people. So apparently they just kind of get out of the way before the thing crashes to the Earth. So again, not the most realistic here. I mean, first of all, it would take a long time for it to fall down because the Earth is spinning, so it wouldn't fall straight down. Would it enter the atmosphere, would kind of, you know, hit the air and friction and sort of burn up for the most part. But anyway, comics are going to comics, I guess. And we get the only thing we get in these panels for these space battles, just a lot of expositional boxes. A lot of dialogue boxes talking about how these space raiders could ravage a world, but they're not getting the chance because these heroes are stopping them basically with their ships. And we do see that Black Panther is heading for some mysterious patch of solid black straight ahead of him. And the dialogue says, yet at the very moment, the most unexpected and potentially cataclysmic occurrence of all is taking place. Peer out the view screen of the Star Cruiser. And Black Panther's saying, this black patch can't be a natural phenomenon. The invaders must perhaps literally be behind it. Let's see what a full charge from the Star Blaster does to it. Nothing. It's a force field. And he calls the Quinjet saying, alert the others. And Cap says, we already have. T'Challa, we saw it too. And Vision decides that himself, Mantis, and Swordsman are going to investigate while Black Panther and Captain America continue to fly and take out the ships. And Vision's ordering Swordsman, snap to, you've been in your own world ever since you returned from the hospital, but I need you now. And Swordsman, you know, he's always been kind of a, I don't know, real self-centered kind of person. I wouldn't even necessarily consider him a hero. And he says, you do, huh? You need a lot of things, like both your woman and mine, Android. You tell me you admire Mantis's mind, but we really know what you mean by that, don't we? And we're told by Roy Thomas in the little box here that happened in Avengers 121. So not sure what Swordsman's problem is, and not sure why Vision needs more than one woman. Not sure why he even needs one woman, because he's an android. So whatever. You know, and we do know, or for those that aren't familiar, so Vision's brainwaves are patterned off Simon Williams, Wonder Man's brainwaves, and Wonder Man always was secretly in love with Scarlet Witch. So that's where kind of the attraction comes from for Vision to be attracted to Scarlet Witch. But again, I mean, Vision here, he doesn't talk like an android, you know, he uses slang and stuff, and it's very strange to me in this issue. So anyway, his response to swordsman is, I'm not even going to dignify that with a reply, Avenger and Mantis, but Mantis wants an answer as well. She's like, what is he saying, Vision? Have you praised this one to him also? So apparently at some point Vision has praised Mantis. And again, you know, Mantis, like we heard earlier, has been doing good things. She's been really helping the Avengers to win battles, and she's, you know, got some sort of cosmic awareness similar to Captain Marvel. She's been a very good part of the Avengers team lately. So, you know, it doesn't seem strange that Vision would praise her, to borrow the word they're using in the book. But what does seem strange is, why is everybody so concerned about an android apparently being in love with Mantis or whatever? I don't know. It's really strange. And Vision tries to just head it all off, saying, enough, this is no time to divide our concentration. We have a mission to complete, a war to win. And we get a little dialogue box here. It says, a very logical, level-headed viewpoint, Vision, but, well, one picture is worth several thousand words. And one picture is worth several thousand words. It's in a dialogue box that's shaped like an arrow, and the arrow is pointing to Scarlet Witch in the panel. And Scarlet Witch has this like look of fear on her face, like, oh no, could Vision love someone else? So again, I'm not buying into the whole soap opera thing. I never really understood about how Vision and Wanda got together in the first place, Scarlet Witch, because again, he's an android, and he's much less human in these Avengers books than he is, like, say, in the MCU movies, right, where he's played by Paul Bettany, and he at least, I don't know, he seems more human there, maybe because I know he's being played by a human actor, whereas here, you know, he's not a robot, but he's closer to being a robot than he is to being human, in my mind, at least that's how he always came across to me. So anyway, that group, they head out, and we do see that through a little bit of exposition, Vision says, good, your helmets and plastigarb covering will protect you for the distance we must cover now. And Scarlet Witch, Mantis, and Swordsman all have these bubble breathers on top of their head. And apparently this plastigarb is some sort of clear, invisible material or costume that protects them from the rigors of space. I'm not sure how it does that, considering, you know, there's no heat in space and they would freeze instantaneously, but whatever, I guess, comics. So they all kind of fly off toward that black patch, and Vision tells Cap, hey, we're clear. Please draw the rest of the Raiders away along with Black Panther so they don't notice. And then Wanda uses her hex power to create an opening in the force field while it's being explained to us what her power actually is, just in case somebody is only reading this because they've been reading Captain Marvel like we are and isn't familiar with the Avengers or Scarlet Witch. So these are things that the comics used to do back in the 80s, just like that recap page we saw. There's always a little bit of thought in the back of the writer's mind that this could be somebody's first issue, so let's do a little bit of explaining just in case so people can learn. And she says, it's only a mutant ability, not anything I trained for, but its probability disrupting influence can shatter the flow of this force field better than a karate chop. So that's what her hex power is. So sure enough, it does separate the force field and allow the four Avengers, Vision, Scarlet Witch, Swordsman, and Mantis to fly through. And when they get inside, what they're greeted with is a vast, vast spacecraft. And according to the description here, it's so big, it makes the darting death ships outside the barrier seem like swirling gnats. So they're wondering why it's hidden there. And Vision uses his phasing power to phase inside the ship and unlock the airlock so they can all get inside. Once they're inside, it doesn't take long before they're attacked by a bunch of marauders who are manning the ship. So the battle is joined. We see Swordsman fighting, the Vision using his density power. We see Mantis using her martial arts skills, and obviously Scarlet Witch using her hex powers. And it's not too long before they subdue the Skrulls and these other various aliens. I don't even know that there's any other type that I really recognize from the Marvel Universe, but there are several Skrulls. So once they've got that handled, they notice that there's a machine there called a universal language equalizer. And it's so interesting. Like, okay, first of all, this is an alien ship. Why would that be in English and being using actual English letters? Makes no sense at all. But Envision even remarks on it. He says, well executed, Wanda. It appears we've taken control of this craft for the moment. And I see now what the craft is. Now that we have time for study, I discern it to be one enormous machine, a machine with a name clearly inscribed in English. And Manta says, English? This one reads the words in Vietnamese. So actually what this machine is, it's a translation machine. And Vision says, that's the answer. This machine causes anyone within its range to perceive words of any language in his or her own tongue. So if you're in range of this machine, not only do you hear whatever language is being spoken to you in your native language, you also read any kind of language in your own native language, what you actually come to understand. So the whole point of this ship and the whole point of it being protected behind a force field is because you've got all these disparate races that Thanos has gathered together, all these different alien species who grew up on different planets, you know, different evolutions, all kinds of things. And they're able to communicate. They're all speaking English. At least that's how we read it. But actually, it's only because this machine is allowing that to happen. And Swordsman says, well, that's how all these different races communicate. And Vision says, yes, exactly. And so what we're going to do is we're going to switch off the device here that's labeled force field. And we'll leave the ship, which then... now all the stars are visible. There's no black patch hiding this this huge ship that's just a translator. There's no force field surrounding it. And that allows the Black Panther and in his stolen Zodiac ship, as well as the Quinjet, to fire upon this translator. It only takes a couple of missiles and it blows up. And at that time, all of a sudden, none of the ships can communicate with each other. None of the aliens aboard the ships can communicate with each other. And we're told sound, the near totality of Galactus emptiness exists without it. But the life that lives on those specks called planets that roll inside the tiny bubbles of atmosphere and are in these ships, life knows sound and life cannot exist without it. And all of a sudden we see these aliens trying to communicate and they're no longer speaking the same language. Says suddenly Akon cannot understand Skrull, pilot cannot understand navigator, enemy cannot understand enemy, friend cannot understand friend. And what happens is these hostile aliens that can no longer communicate and get along, they get upset at each other and they start fighting amongst themselves, which causes ships to go out of control. It's all confusion and it basically leads to the destruction and downfall of this massive fleet that Thanos had sent to invade Earth. They can't even understand how to use the controls anymore. They don't understand the information that's coming in over the computers that are used to help pilot these ships and navigate these ships. So Scarlet Witch, Vision, Swordsman, and Mantis get back on the Quinjet along with Thor. And Thor is smiling, saying, Avengers, this day our battle has been won, and it won't be long before the combined might of Captain Marvel and ourselves, that Thanos will be defeated as well. So Cap says, Thor, as I've recently learned, faith can blind you to your own mistakes. Hopefully you're right. And they head home, basically. And as they land on top of Avengers Mansion, they exit the ship and head into the mansion. And hiding behind a chimney on the roof is Thanos himself, which, again, you know, like the talking in space and some of the other things that didn't quite make sense. I don't understand this. Like, literally, we see Thanos hiding and peering around this chimney. He has the power of a god. Why? Like, what are you doing? Why don't you just make yourself invisible? We don't know what's going on. We don't know why he is doing what he's doing. And Vision is saying, I have to concur with Mantis's misgivings that although Captain America speaks well, the feelings of danger have suddenly increased, even though we've defeated this this fleet. There's something going on with nature itself that's filling my mind with gloom. And we know, because we've been reading Captain Marvel, that those feelings that the universe has changed, that there's some feeling of something wrong, is because Thanos has become one with the universe. So again, Thanos hiding behind the chimney here, Vision saying, I find I must concur with Mantis. I'm sorry, we don't know the limits of the cosmic cube, and the power Thanos has could dwarf the power of this fleet that we just defeated. And what are we going to do if that's the case? And Thanos is thinking, who could believe I would sacrifice an entire fleet as part of my master plan? Whether the Avengers won or lost, their mere involvement with my space pawns has doomed the planet Earth. So apparently, it was always Thanos' plan to have his space fleet be defeated. But for what purpose, we don't know. And again, we have to wonder, why the machinations, Thanos? You have the power of a god. Whatever your plan is here, why did it need to involve sacrificing all these ships and all these marauders that you had recruited over the years? So I guess the agonizing answers are in Captain Marvel number 33, now on sale, grab it quick, according to the little box at the end of the issue here. And there's also a little blurb about next month's Avengers 126, which I don't know, I've never read. Maybe it's all about Scarlet Witch and Mantis and Swordsman and their apparent love quadrangle, very soap opera-y, but but what we're going to talk about next time on the next Marvel Chronology is Captain Marvel number 33, which brings to a close the first big, massive Thanos story that Jim Starlin had been crafting early in his career. So we'll find out the answers of why Thanos sacrificed his fleet, what the whole purpose of that was. And like I said, we'll get a conclusion to the story. So as far as this goes, I suppose it's necessary in the scheme of things to sort of understand why the Avengers aren't a bigger threat to Thanos. I guess we'll put it that way. It is interesting, you know, the comics were put together much differently back then in terms of this is kind of a one and done standalone issue. You know, there's no writing for the trade or collecting this story or that story into trades. So, as I said at the beginning of the issue, Steve Englehart was just telling the Avengers stories that he wanted to tell. And then once he kind of wrapped up the things that he needed to wrap up on the first two or three pages there, we got Cap coming back, Secret Empire, Libra slash Zodiac. A story wrapped up with him being led away in chains. And then we got this one page and with everything syncing up. And now we get this issue, which explains about the space fleet and how it was defeated. And then we're going to just move on in the next issue of Avengers with Englehart starting up his new story that he wants to tell while continuing other subplots that have been going on with Swordsman and Mantis and Vision and whatnot. So comics really aren't done that way anymore. If it was crossed over, it would be either crossed over for, you know, the whole story arc, so you would collect that story arc in its own trade, or the actual subplots would have been more main plots here, and we would have, it would have kind of been flipped. We would have got a couple of pages with the Avengers battling the fleet, the Thanos ordered fleet, and the rest of the story would have been main Avengers stuff. So kind of interesting that how they used to do these crossovers here. And we bumped the Avengers title up a few weeks, I guess I'll say, or a few days at least, to get it synced up with Captain Marvel. So everything that's been talked about here with Avengers, it all gets resolved and taken care of in Captain Marvel 33. And the Avenger title is able to continue on its way without any repercussions or lasting consequences from this one particular issue. So I will say the art is pretty solid. I mean, John Buscema is absolutely legendary. Do see the Dave Cockrum influence, and they're both listed as artists. My guess is it's going to be Buscema doing kind of layouts and then Cockrum kind of finishing them up. So a little bit more involved than just doing inks, and it does give the art a little bit of a Cockrum feel. Because Cockrum's art's a little more, a little more severe, I guess. His line work is a little heavier than Buscema is. It's just a little more, I don't want to say sinister looking. It has a little more of an edge to it. Whereas Buscema's art is a little more smooth in my mind. But they're both legends. They're both incredible artists. I don't know that I've ever seen them work together on an issue before. So that's interesting. I will say that I kind of prefer Buscema to just be Buscema on his own without the Cockrum influence. And I prefer Cockrum to just be Cockrum. You know, he should be doing pencils and maybe his own inks for that matter. But solid art, absolutely no problem with the storytelling. It is interesting to read these old issues like we've been doing on the Thanos Reading Order, and like I've talked about a lot, especially with Steve Englehart, who's a legend in his own right. The dialogue is a little bit hokey, you know, and I mention it when it comes to the Vision using slang and calling Captain America Cap, things like that. It doesn't necessarily ring true. I will say that at least Englehart stays out of the trap that Gary Friedrich used to fall in all the time, really using a lot of slang, which kind of dates it when you start talking about groovy and, you know, other words like that. So at least he stays out of that. And I know Englehart actually handles the scripting on the final part of the Thanos story in Captain Marvel 33 as well, which is interesting because we saw Friedrich as Starlin's scripter early on, and then we saw Starlin was handling it all himself. And now I'm not sure why we get Englehart on the last issue, but I know we do. And I'll talk a little bit about that when I cover the next issue. But all in all, this was solid. I think probably my favorite thing about the issue, though, is the cover. I don't recall seeing this issue on sale very often, like as a back issue. Because I feel like I would notice it, especially with the popularity of Thanos, because it's such a striking cover. I mean, it's just amazing. So obviously I'll use the cover for the album art for the podcast. I'll throw an isolation image of the cover as well on the page on LRM online and on the comicsourceblog.com, just so you guys can see it all by itself in a kind of a bigger resolution, better resolution. Because it's a really, really cool cover. Like, if I saw this cover, it would make me want to buy the book. Like, no doubt about it. It's that good. So it's got Thanos there. You know, not that same image of Thanos that we've seen, where it's just an outline and he's clear and you can see the star field behind him. But a giant-sized Thanos, clearly indicating that he is very powerful, you know, godlike being. And we see the Avengers attacking him, and Scarlet Witch's hex power seems to just be bouncing off of the bolt that she's firing at him. So really, really great cover. Yeah, just spectacular and a fun issue. Which, if you read on its own, you don't get a whole lot of context. I feel like you definitely need to read this as a part of the bigger story that's been going on in Captain Marvel. And then you obviously want to read Captain Marvel 33, the final issue, because it does end the story, if not wrap everything up in a nice, neat bow. So we'll definitely be talking about that on the next episode of Marvel Chronology. So I want to thank everybody for joining me as always. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms, All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.